sitting down, sitting under the tree down there,
together with all beings. That upon hearing it, no doubt will arise in us, and nor will we lack in faith. The true Dharma that could never be anywhere else. It's always radiating raining on us. So when hearing it and meeting it, we vow to be able to release our doubts and trust this Dharma. Find the trusting mind. The way, the Tao. What is the way? Our ancestors have said, ordinary mind is the way. Heijō-shin is Japanese for ordinary mind or everyday mind. Heijō is like, also implies continuous. Even permanent. But as a compound, it's also refers to ordinary or everyday. And maybe that's because ordinariness continues without cease. Everyday is maybe a nice translation, because everyday mind is the mind that's with us every day. Every moment, continuity of this mind. That's the way. So there's various ways this has been pointed out, this ordinary mind of the way. And for me, these days, I most appreciate this particular instruction that points towards it. I think different instructions work for different people. Different pointers work for different people and work for the same people at different times. More and more I just appreciate the total straightforwardness and simplicity of this particular pointer that I think many of you have heard, but please bear with me bringing it up once more. Asking personally, asking ourselves this question: is awareness present now? Is there awareness right here and now? Such a simple question. And I think that's why I appreciate it most, because there's no fancy, poetic, Zen language twists on this. There's no mysterious answer that we're supposed to find. We could ask, who is this right now? It's a classic Zen and a pointer in Zen and many other traditions. But then when we ask, who is this? We're looking for some special answer, maybe. But this gives the answer already. That's what's nice about this one. Is awareness present right now? Basically, we're just looking for awareness. That's what we're going to find if we also ask, who is this, who is thinking, who is walking, who is talking, who is feeling. Is there awareness? Maybe it helps to fully taste this, to close our eyes, just because there's less objective stuff happening that way. Well, is there awareness here? Just asking the question, shifts the mind. Maybe you can sense that experience. For me, I'm usually thinking about something or experiencing something, and this question, simple question, shifts the mind just a little tiny bit, a hair's breadth difference. Which is the difference between heaven and earth. Is awareness here? And it doesn't mean that we have to stop also listening to these words or feeling bodily sensations. We're just shifting the attention slightly to that which we hardly ever pay attention to, because it's so ordinary. It's so continuous that we don't really notice it. We notice what comes and goes. And it could be slightly frustrating to pay attention to this, because it's not something to pay attention to. Awareness itself. And then we're maybe tuning in a little bit to this, then the next question can be asked, how do I know that there's awareness here? Or what is it? We could ask, what is it that knows awareness is present? We do know awareness is present, don't we? What is it that knows? What would you say, anyone?
Awareness.
Yeah, that's what I would say. We may look for somebody else. Well, what is it? It's like me that knows it or something. But actually, doesn't that end up being the only possible answer, really? Awareness knows it's aware. And this experientially asking these questions, this second question seems to not really shift the mind in a different direction than the first question, but seems to me to almost firm it up a little bit, or like if it's a little bit vague still, is awareness present right here, then to ask, what is it that knows this? How is this known? Awareness is being aware of awareness. It almost like settles this new experience more completely into itself. Because now we see there's nothing else needed to be involved in this experience of awareness. Yes, it's clear and obvious awareness is present right now, and actually always was, I just wasn't paying attention to it. How is this known? Awareness is always aware of itself. Now there's being aware of being aware, which of course is not two different things. It's just a more maybe stable way of now being aware. Again, there can be sounds of words in the background and feelings and sensations, but the awareness is now more attending to itself rather than those objects that it so easily attends to. Is this not like a slightly different experience than our usual mind that's running along, focused so intently on its objects and thoughts and feelings? Aware. Just aware. It's a little slippery because we're so used to kind of landing on a stable object. Much more easy to focus on an object. So if it feels slippery or like we can't quite get a hold of this awareness to be aware of it, that's the way it is, actually. It can't be gotten a hold of. And yet, awareness is always aware of itself at the same time as it might be involved in other phenomena. Is awareness present? What is it that knows this fact? Now that we may be kind of in it, a third question can arise. In the actual experience of being aware of being aware, apart from ideas and concepts about it, in this experience, are there any edges or boundaries to this awareness? If we have some doubt, well, maybe there might be or not, we could also ask it as, can we find any edges or boundaries? When I look, even if there may be, I can't find any. Especially with the eyes closed, it seems to just extend infinitely, like space. Because it's not a physical substance, it's just awareness. How could awareness have any boundaries or edges anyway? And the more we start to confirm that it has no edges or boundaries, and get more familiar with actually like tasting this, then we must conclude that if there's no edges, that it's basically infinite, that everything we experience in the world of objects, like the sound of the voice, the feeling of the bottom on the cushion, the breath, a mood, that all of this must be included within this awareness. Mustn't it? If it were to be, if any experience were to be outside this awareness, that would mean the awareness has an edge or boundary and something is outside it. But in our experience, it doesn't seem to be the case when we look and investigate. Now I can even open the eyes, and suddenly it's a more usual picture of the world that seems to be out there. But wait a second. Didn't we just confirm that awareness has no edges or boundaries? It's not possible for anything to be outside of it. Now we have a more unusual, maybe it seems like a bigger shift now, to trust that actually everything we perceive in the visual world is also included within this awareness. It's easy now to let kind of standard human logic doubt this. So I have to keep confirming in our actual experience. Maybe we go back to closing the eyes. Yeah, there's just this awareness, all the senses, the sensory objects and thoughts and feelings and emotions, every possible experience known in the world of experience must be included in this awareness. I mean, it seems so directly to be so. Oh, wait a second now. The eyes open. And yet, how could it be any different? Yes? Yeah, we could say, another way we could come to that conclusion that this awareness is to say, if this awareness is not like a physical substance, like gel, big jellyfish of awareness, it's not a one bright pearl. These are, metaphors for it, but actually, it's not even air molecules, right? It's awareness. It's not physical. And yet it's like, it's undeniably true. It's like, in a way, the nice thing about this meditation is, it's like maybe the only experience we can confirm most directly and undeniably, every single one of us, is that there's awareness here. I'm aware. So we could kind of like sort of like reasoning a little bit. We could say if there's nothing outside of it experientially, then all of this that I mentioned is in it, included within it. If it's actually physical, like solid stuff, like matter, how could you put a solid book into the space called awareness, right? Doesn't that seem kind of weird? So therefore, as Rob says, therefore this what appears to be a solid book actually must be awareness itself. How strange and not the way we usually relate to things. And yet, we can, you know, check this out in our zazen, especially in sesshin, because we have a lot of periods to do nothing more than just check it out. Check out what's happening, right? Check out this, our experience. That's what zazen always is just being with our experience. And it's allowed during zazen to kind of like look around and explore the experience. We can sometimes just be with just, you know, we could just be looking at the book and like experience looking at book. I think if we do that long enough too, we'll start to wonder what's going on here too. But we can ask such questions. I enjoy it myself, these particular questions, because again, for me, it just seems like the most direct questions to subtly shift our perception into ordinariness, actually. It's kind of ironic that we call this ordinary mind, this boundless awareness, because it seems like we're not usually thinking of our experience in this way, so it seems kind of extraordinary, and yet it's ordinary in the sense that it's always the case. This awareness is always here, and then it's the phenomena that appear within it are much more captivating and easy to attend to, because it's just the way that our mind works. So in a way, they're kind of extraordinary. And we might even, from the perspective of awareness now, being the awareness, we might say, now, this is really extraordinary that we can share a world, right, and communicate and manifest human bodies, and that awareness can do this. That's extraordinary. Miraculous, even. Sesshin is good for even with all the pain and struggle and tedious boredom, maybe even in sesshin, it does tend to open us to the miraculous nature of life. And however we open to miraculousness, ordinary miraculousness, right? It's just miraculous to be alive, actually, right? And to sit together in this way. Maybe that's not that ordinary now. To sit day after day together in this silent way is that's almost extraordinary. It's almost like miraculous in a different kind of way, but you know, for us Zen practitioners, it's actually kind of ordinary. Another sesshin, it's very familiar. This feeling in my butt. I remember this. the way we're softened and sensitized as the days go on. Little things touch us despite ourselves. So how does this awareness meditation work for you? You have any questions? Did you lose it along the way? Or do you see how it could be, do you see some like possibly major implications of such a view?
Well,
call a book, which is a tree, and before that, who knows what else, and then these little pieces, we call them paper with black marks on them that we call print, that we, there are so many levels of awareness and putting all that together and then being able to talk about it and then read from it. And of course it's translated from Chinese and Japanese and on and on it goes.
It's all part of the miracle.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we might also ask, all this stuff that appears within awareness, or as we could say, is actually awareness, distant, you know, not like, it's like falling into some kind of duality. Then we could say, well, how did all this stuff happen? What is all this? You know, awareness is so plain and simple, especially if it's very quiet and our eyes are closed. It's just like boundless space. But then any little thing that arises in our experience, how does this stuff come to be? And the Buddha says, it dependently arises. It comes to be dependent on conditions, which were dependent on conditions, which were dependent on conditions, beginninglessly and endlessly. Appearances arise in the space of awareness dependent on conditions. And if we're really looking at it from the point of view of awareness, and it's all kind of made of awareness or is awareness, then we could say the conditions are kind of like mostly around like karmic consciousness. You know, the conditions of being a sentient being that can conceive of duality. You see, there's like the building blocks of experience. And that we all kind of do this together. It's in our world system, we can make trees into paper and print words on them and translate languages and in a highly complex, evolved way. And agree on what's going on here in the field of awareness.
So how does that help versus obscure awareness? Awareness.
The story of dependent arising, or?
Yeah, I mean, how does all that, it can go both ways. I mean, anything that we experience can be used either to increase our awareness of awareness or to obscure it.
Yes, yes, exactly, yeah. And in a way, like, anything.
We have that choice.
It's kind of like that. We kind of have that so-called choice. Or there's those two options, we might say, of letting the objects of experience of the world obscure the awareness, which is usually what we do. It's usually what I do. Is I'm just like thinking of them as objects and dealing with them as objects, including all my thoughts and feelings and all of that, because that's the way they seem to appear and we're used to relating to them. Or we can keep, in a way, it's sort of like training awareness to keep looking back at itself or keep remembering that there is awareness present here with no edges, therefore everything must be within it or made of it. And that retraining so slow process. Periods of zazen can go on completely forgetting this. Even myself being like totally devoted to and trusting this practice, still my habits are so strong to get caught up in the objects of experience. Yes.
Yeah. it's challenging when, I don't know, like the pace of the formal process that we're in, like in our day-to-day lives and our workaday lives, I feel like there's like this speediness that makes it so difficult to remain available. It's almost like, it'd be cool if we could set up like a sashin kind of compartment in each workplace today. So like our work period or times between sittings could be like whatever our day-to-day busyness is, and then we return to like another zazen period or something to help like bleed that into, you know, I feel like there's something about our practice being in this particular space that's like tricking my mind to think that this is the only place where that happens.
Yes.
It should be different, right? Awareness is awareness.
Yeah. This is a great point about the kind of practical point. And I think I will see like two different sides. One is just finding practical ways to remind ourselves in our busy life and in just little ways that often involve, you know, you could say what busyness is just being like really, really into objects. Maybe that's a definition of like one after the other quickly. And so there's almost no time or space to step back. So slowing down and having get like non-objectifying times that might be like, maybe we sit in the car just before turning the key, just like, but is there awareness here? And then go, it's just to keep coming back. Yeah, you know. Totally. Yeah. Yeah, it's hard in this world where most people aren't even interested in such a practice, right? So yes. So we can create little practical reminders. Yeah, and I know it stands totally into this in the school system, talking about these little practical mindful moments. I think this is one side, and then the other kind of also practical thing that we're kind of engaged in now, I think, is well, you could say daily zazen in general, and then sashin as a kind of like practical tool in a way to like really steep in it for a long time, so that carries over more naturally into our everyday working life. So and I think we all know this. I think we often feel those first few days after sashin, right? It's how it's easier, a little bit easier, and then we forget again. So that's why we have another session. it's a training, you could say. In a way, from a really ultimate perspective, we might say it's just to do it in itself. It's not for anything later. It's a nice way to look too. But I think as a practical thing, it really does apply. And you see how that's like a slightly different one is bringing these moments into the daily life, and one is having a really big like full dose, you know, then without even having to create the moments as much, maybe in the couple days after sashin, we naturally remember more. Yes, Joyce.
I think it's just a season to mute our awareness in a lot of ways because of the bombardment of making
commandments. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's ironic people get more stressed during the holiday season. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the kind of consumer frenzy can take us away, and like family gatherings that are, you know, have great joy in them can also become like a stressful, like I have to take care of these people just right, or they're gonna blame me or something.
Part of my family.
Yeah. So, yeah, mindful moments, and zazen's a good chance, and lots of zazen's a good opportunity, and yeah, so maybe the implications are obvious of if everything is included within awareness, we might be able to, if we really kind of like taste that, kind of, you know, investigate, reason about that a little bit, and then in zazen, when we're silently sitting, kind of really settle into that trust, I think already the feeling can shift. We sometimes relax more. I sometimes notice that actually the body, oh, okay. There's still maybe all kinds of stuff happening, but okay, it's like a different perspective now on the stuff. A hair's breadth difference, but it makes a big difference. And then the implications are also, we're just not as like caught up in grasping the stuff. And we could say, well, we still do get caught by stuff, but maybe less so. But part of the implications too is we could then imagine, based on this principle, that if it were possible to really stay in touch with this spacious awareness at the same time as working in the world, if these were really integrated, how wonderful. How we could really imagine maybe the potential of really not being caught up by in the stuff, maybe even at all. Maybe hard to imagine this completely, but almost just based on the principle. I would understand this to be like, we're talking about the territory of Buddha's enlightenment that we're celebrating this week. And you might feel like, I'm so far from that. But if we understand this principle, then we might be like, but I see that this could be possible, potentially, to train the mind more and more gradually in this sudden way, in this sudden insight, gradually, getting used to, that's what the gradual training is like, familiarization, it's sometimes said, with this new perspective, such that, maybe it could be a kind of continuity. Yes?
Yeah, I sort of noticed more today than like in the beginning of Sesshin. Like, the beginning of Sesshin was more like an experience of, okay, you know, where's the breath, where's awareness, and kind of like building up a steam or something, but like doing something in order to get someplace. Whereas sort of today, you know, when I would get trapped in whatever mental machination it might be, it was sort of easier to get sort of back on track by seeing that it's like awareness just trapped awareness in awareness. So it kind of like just brings that back into alignment or accordance.
Yeah.
As opposed to thinking like, oh, okay, I got trapped. All right, bad practitioner. Mm-hmm. Where's the rush? Okay, let's like work back up to
Yeah, and it may be very gradual, step by step, okay. We might be able to more quickly make the hair's breadth shift, which is always a hair's breadth shift, but I think I agree completely that when we're out of tune or out of practice or something, then it's like, it seems like it's a long struggle to like, whereas more and more we remember that it's actually each step of this struggle, awareness is already here.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. But the very picking up the shovel. What is this shovel? And who picked it up? Yeah. That's almost like the flexibility of mind to like shift more easily. And then also it's remembering and confirming this again and again in our experience that when we're in touch with this awareness, we know then by kind of how it works in our own experience that we know that it's never lost. Yeah. It's continuous. Heijoshin. It's every day. Yeah, it's waiting for us. Yeah. It's always here. It's even while we're completely caught up in whatever. And therefore, it's just more, I think it's a matter of, maybe first it's a matter of like trusting, really, and through investigating and confirming more and more, again and again, and more and more deeply, trusting that we know actually that we're not just like, this isn't just a nice story to talk us into something. Which it could, we might still, that's like a doubt, right? Oh, these are Buddhas and ancestors, they're like brainwashing us into some weird story, which couldn't really be reality because it's too weird. And then, so it's partly trusting it, and I think that's an ongoing process of like, maybe it really is like this. And then the other part then is like, is remembering. And they're kind of two different things. You could say, we need the trust part first because then we have nothing to remember if we don't really trust it. But we're maybe gradually deepening the trust and then working on the remembering part. Because we can have a deep trust but continuously forget. Also, right? So it's like almost two different modes of practice, it feels like to me. Related but slightly different. Despite ourselves. Sometimes I think just by continuing to sit, that's the beauty of Sesshin, right? You just keep sitting long enough, it's like, we can't, like, our fighting it, just gets weaker, you know, or we just get more flexible and softer and malleable, and that shift happens despite ourselves. Yeah. Yeah. And I think physical pain, which is Sesshin, is a good opportunity to be able to examine that one, whether we like it or not, right? Is really challenging, I find. It's like when it gets really intense and I'm just feeling like, can I trust this practice of awareness of this pain? Sometimes it gets to that point of like, it's like, it's the, you know, it's almost like it's the physicality is almost like the realest thing. I think, I don't know, maybe it's not. Sometimes it seems like a tactility is just so much more solid than a thought or emotion, but maybe not, right? Because sometimes it seems like a thought or emotion is way more excruciating than a physical pain. So, anyway, our reifying mind can make a nice solid chunk of pretty much anything. Without the choice of deciding, signing up for Sesshin, right? Yeah, good to remember that across this whole world of sentient beings, there is so much suffering. This is the first noble truth. And it's where, you know, from this noble truth, the wheel of Dharma was set in motion. And, remembering others is good to keep in perspective. And, old age, sickness, and death, all around us and in ourselves, we will, I think it's, could be valuable to, reflect on, this is how our dying process will be, and, what we will all face this sometime relatively soon in the span of the world. Our lifetime is a blink of an eye, and what can we take refuge in at such a time? What's our refuge? I think this is another name for the trusting mind. What do we trust most deeply? And can we deepen our refuge in the awareness that that doesn't come and go through birth and death? So the third ancestor's song of the trusting mind says, the way, which we've heard is also called ordinary mind, the way is perfect or complete, like vast space where nothing is lacking and nothing is extra. Yes. The way is perfect, complete. This Chinese character means round, complete, perfect, like vast space where nothing is lacking and nothing is extra. In this way, called awareness, there's nothing missing or excluded because there's nothing outside it. And there's nothing extra, there's nothing in it that has to be removed or like put outside it, because nothing can be put outside it. There's nothing lacking and nothing extra. Yeah, yeah. It's complete.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's all inclusive. The way is all inclusive. Nothing can be excluded from it or brought into it. And it can't be improved or diminished or, tainted. It can't be tainted by the thought, I'm an asshole. And it can't be improved by total serenity with not a single thought arising. Actually, it doesn't improve the awareness in the slightest bit from the asshole thought, right? The awareness remains the same. So that's what we're so counterintuitive, even in meditation practice, right? To think we're trying to do something. We're trying to improve the meditation and eliminate the obscurations. So in Dogen's extensive record, Dogen says, in the Dharma Hall discourse, Zen teacher Huang Long Pudre said, quote, the third ancestor mirror wisdom Sangha jewel said, the great way, or the way, is perfect like vast space with nothing lacking and nothing extra. Indeed, it is due to our choosing or rejecting that we do not see thus or such. And then this Chinese teacher Huang Long says about that, for Buddhas it does not increase. With ordinary beings it does not decrease. if it's without increase or decrease, how do some verify unsurpassed awakening while others fall into birth and death? How is it that simply due to grasping and rejecting, we do not see thus? Because all Buddhas have no discriminating mind, they verify the unsurpassed way. And because ordinary beings have discriminating mind, they fall into birth and death. So that's, say, it's just a matter of discriminating mind could be just a dualistic mind that believes in the objects as separate from awareness. That's the only difference between verifying awakening and falling into birth and death. Therefore, in a sutra, this teacher says, dream phantoms and imagined flowers in the sky are like the moonlight reflected on the water. And birth and death and nirvana are both like those flowers in the sky. Birth and death and nirvana, samsara and nirvana, are both like dreams and sky flowers and reflections in the water. A sutra says, apparently. And Huang Long says, if you can see this, then stop the conference in front of the Pipali cave and consider well the path of Cao Chi, the sixth ancestor. Then Huang Long struck his Zen seat with his whisk and descended from the platform. So the conference at Pipali Cave is this first Buddhist council in Rajagir, where after the Buddha's passing, his disciples all gathered around to collect the sutras, and where Ananda said, "Thus have I heard." It was like this. And so they, this conference in front of Pipali Cave, Huang Long says, if you can see this, that birth and death and nirvana are both like dreams and reflections, then we can stop this conference in front of Pipali Cave. We don't need to collect all these sutras. Stop the conference. Just consider instead the path of Cao Chi, the sixth ancestor. So that it's kind of saying the separate transmission outside this huge collection of scriptures gathered in this cave. We just need the direct pointing into the human mind, seeing the nature of awareness and being Buddha. So Dogen quotes this long story of Huang Long, and then he says, "Today I, Ehe, remove the horn from Huang Long's head and respectfully raise up the jewel in the top knot of Huang Long's crown." And Taigen interprets this as kind of like, I'm going to somewhat critique Huang Long, because that's what, to make the story longer. I'm removing his horn. And I'm also raising up the jewel in his top knot, meaning like he's got this priceless jewel on his head, and that he's got a great teaching here. I'm also going to raise that up as well as remove his horn. I'm going to critique and praise. "Great assembly, do you want to clearly understand this point?" And Dogen says, "The way is perfect like vast space with nothing lacking and nothing extra. Therefore, all Buddhas verify the supreme way. The way is perfect like vast space with nothing lacking and nothing extra. Therefore, ordinary people fall into birth and death." It's a little change instead of saying, if you realize this, then that's the side of realizing great awakening. This is like, because everything is perfect and complete with nothing lacking and nothing extra, then Buddhas realize awakening and people fall into birth and death. All perfectly complete in this space. how is it possible to not choose and reject and therefore not see thus? Do you want to know this principle? In their last moments before becoming Buddhas, Bodhisattvas unfailingly sit on the Vajra seat. In their first arousing the mind of awakening, the aspiration for Buddhahood, Bodhisattvas unfailingly arouse bodhicitta, the aspiration for awakening. If you can see this, the great way is perfect like vast space with nothing lacking and nothing extra. So first this point is that Buddhas realizing awakening and beings getting caught up in birth and death are all the perfect way with nothing lacking and nothing extra. And in this case, saying in their last moments before becoming Buddhas, Bodhisattvas sit under the Bodhi tree like the Buddha this week. But in their very first moment of first arousing bodhicitta, like Shakyamuni, like in countless lifetimes before he became Shakyamuni Buddha, he aroused this compassionate wish to let go of everything for the benefit of all beings. So at that first moment of that intention, Dogen's saying, the way is perfect like vast space with nothing lacking and nothing extra. Delusion and realization are included, and the final realization and the very first thought, the beginning and the end of practice, you could say, and everything in between, each moment of zazen, is equally wholeness of practice, equally wholeness of realization. So through delusion and realization, through space and time, through the beginner's mind, and the completion of the way, all perfect like vast space, with nothing lacking and nothing extra. How could it not be thus? Nothing could ever be excluded from this. Actually, timeless awareness, when in accord with this awareness, when being this awareness, that's another thing we can investigate is, does it seem like there's some time passing? Is awareness like moving along? Or is it actually not in the realm of time? Just like awareness is not in the realm of space, we say it's like vast space, but it's not in the world of physical space. It's also not in the world of physical time. Is it not? It's timeless and spaceless. Therefore, each moment is all-inclusive also. And if it has no edges or boundaries, one of my favorite implications is that therefore so-called my awareness and so-called your awareness are not different awarenesses. If they were, they'd have to be like edges where they meet, and we'd be like a big kind of bubble around us, and like we'd bump into each other. Oh, my awareness just hit your awareness. But in fact, they're all Buddhas and all sentient beings are only this one mind, as Huangbo said. One mind. Also, sounds extraordinary, but I think maybe more extraordinary that we think, I have a mind and you have a mind, we all have a mind, let's have a mind. That's bizarre normality. Which I pretty much like operate from most of the time. If this were easy, I wouldn't have to sit so long. If this were not simple, it would be hopeless. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.